We're holding on page Dalet in Yevamos, Abba Achen Perek Shlishi Ois Yud. Still continuing to talk about Dinim of Yibum and Chalitza and various other things related to that. The Mishnah presents a very odd case where it's one of those kinds of things like the Alter Rebbe describes in Kuntres Achren, one of those things that probably has never happened in real life, but nevertheless the Torah still addresses it, and it's part of Chochmasa Ritzon Shalach Hashem Baruch Hu, where you have two couples that have gotten married, and then somehow when it came to going home for the night, they mixed up which kala was whose, and you have all kinds of issues as far as Eishasish and Mamzerus and all kinds of other fun things like that. Anyway. You have the wrong volume there. It's volume, should be volume realized.
Yeah.
No, right. I don't know how Dalet got in there. It's still, yeah. Anyway, so in the course of the discussion, then the Gemara brings up the point that the women in this scenario were probably besulos, and so the Gemara asks that in that case, then why is the Mishnah addressing what might happen if they have children from this, when in general the Gemara establishes as a rule that ein ishim saberes mi bia rishona, that a woman generally doesn't get pregnant from her first bia, which breaks her besulin. Now, nowadays, that's not necessarily the case. It could be one of those nishtanu aktivim things. It could be because women get married at older ages now than they used to. Whatever the case, the Gemara takes it as pretty much a given that if a woman is a besula, she's not going to get pregnant from her first bia. So page Dalet in Yevamos, Ois Yud. So the Gemara deals with that point. But then the Gemara says, by the way, if you're going to tell me that a woman never becomes pregnant from Bia Rishona, then how do we explain Tomo with Yehuda? She only had the one time Bia with him, and she became pregnant with Peretz and Zerah. So the Gemara explains that she miyacha be'etzba. She deliberately went and removed her besulim ahead of time with her fingers, because she knew she's only going to have the one chance with Yehuda. She's disguising herself as Kadesha over there, and she knows she's not going to have another opportunity, so she has to make the most of it. So the Gemara says in this connection, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, kol moyachos shel beis Rebbe, all the women in the family of Rebbe, or in the family of Nesiim in general, who would do this kind of thing, who would remove their besulim before they have their first relations with their husband, Tomer Shman, they are nicknamed Tomer in admiration, like they're like their ancestress Tomer who did that. Now, why would they do that? We often find in the Gemara that people would get married, and then immediately after they got married, the husband would go away for many years to learn Torah. Rabbi Akiva is a famous example of that. There's many examples of it in Shas. So they don't want that it's going to be maybe many years before their husband is back, and they don't want to wait with starting a family. They're ready to, fine, I'll raise the children by myself, and I'll manage by myself, I'll be my husband is learning Torah. So they would want to make sure that they're able to become pregnant right away, and therefore they would remove their besulin. What? So the pastor's third husband has been stayed in 9 months, no. I mean, I guess you could say with Beis Rebbe, at least, you know, they were Nesiim, you know, it's not like she's going to have to scrounge for a living, so maybe they could afford to, I don't know, like this we find, for example, with Rachel, that she did that with enormous Mesiras Nefesh. I don't know that other wives of Talmud HaChachamim would necessarily do that kind of thing, but in any case, in Beis Rebbe, they did. So they...
The years anyway.
No, because then they already have Bia Shnia, then there's no need for it. The whole point is they're only going to have a chance for Bia Rishona, and then the husband is leaving. So they would call them Tomer, Laman Nikla Shmon Tomer, and they would nickname them Tomer, Al Shem Tomer Shem Yecha Be'etzba, like their ancestress Tomer, who went and then did that step in order that she'd be sure of becoming pregnant from Yehuda. The question is, why did she need to do that anyway? Wasn't she already married first to Er and then to Onan? So in Pasha, she's not a Basula by the time she meets up with Yehuda anyhow. The answer is Shaloi Kedarkan, Shimshu. The answer is that Er and Onan had relations with Tomer, Shaloi Kedarka, so they didn't break her psulim. Well, how do we know that? The Shlema Onan, Ksibbei V'shiches Arza. By Onan, it's clear. The Pasuk says that he wasted his Zera on Arza, literally means to the ground. Now, Rashi on the Pasuk mentions, and Eitz Yosef discusses it, actually, that... There are different midrashim on it. The Rashi on the pasuk follows a medrash that is called Chodor Doshin B'fnim V'Zodim B'chutz. He would have relations Kedarka, but then he would spill it on the outside. But here the Gemara is taking a different view of the matter. It was inside, but it was Shaloi Kedarka, and therefore that's not going to break her psulim, and obviously it's not going to make her pregnant. So in other words, the Gemara is understanding Aritza as like a euphemistic term for Shaloi Kedarka. So Oinen, it's clear. Ella Er Minolon, but where do we see that Er did such a thing? Amr of Nachmitzchok, because the pasuk says by Yomas Gam Oisei. When it says that Oinen died, it says Hashem killed also him. So the also, what do you mean? I mean, if we said that Er died and then Oinen died, of course it's also. It means Afu Boisem Misemes, that he died for the same reason. Once the pasuk specifies by Oinen that it was because of Shiches Aritza, then we understand that Er was guilty of the same thing as well. Well, now we have to understand their motivation. Mishlema Oinen, Mishum Lo Yiazora. Oinen didn't want to impregnate Tamar because, as the pasuk says, he knew the child is not really going to be his in the sense he would be doing Yibum. And as we learned yesterday, in the Gemara that it's not like the baby has to be named after the dead brother. But nevertheless, Alpi Kabbalah's idea that it's not in a certain sense, it's not considered his child. Biologically, of course it is, but Alpi Kabbalah, it's a Gilgal of his dead brother. In a certain sense, it's to reestablish his brother's name rather than to establish his own name. So he figured, if I have a child with Tamar, in a certain sense, it's not going to be considered mine. It's just going to be like a continuation of Aaron. I don't want that. And he was selfish. Ella Er my time of Avatachi, but Er is her first husband. What's his concern? And the reason is Kadesh Alit Isabah Tachish Yofia, he didn't want her to become pregnant and that would ruin her beauty, like we find in the Dura Mabel. Rashi mentions the same thing about Lemech, that people in those times would have two wives for that reason. So that explains the bottom line is that even after Aaron, after Oinon, she was still a Basula, and therefore when she meets up with Yehuda, then she needs to take the step of Miacha Be'etzba in order to be able to become pregnant. No, we learned yesterday that the Gemara says that this is an example. This is an unusual thing that in that Mikra Yotzim Yidei Pshutei, we completely ignore the simple meaning of the pasuk in favor of the drosha that it means that the Bechor is the one who should do Yibum, and Yaakov Hashem Achav Ames means that he inherits his dead brother's property. Now, we talked about it yesterday. I don't know. Maybe you came in after we learned that part. But yeah.
The name.
No, you don't. That's the thing. No. I'll be Alacha. You don't have to. The Gemara clearly establishes that point, and I mentioned yesterday there's actually a piece from the Zohar that gives an example of that, where Rav Abba comes to a certain place, and a guy comes and tells him, "I want to ask you for advice. I recently did Yibum, and we had a baby boy, and I named him after my brother." And Rav Abba says, "Don't name him. Give him a different name." Yeah. So yeah. Okay. Okay. Anyway. Okay, Hacholot's Perek Rabbi, so now it starts talking about, in this Perek it starts talking more about when Chalitza can be done, and also in the course of it, it mentions the point about that you have to be, the Gemara makes the point, you have to be careful that you don't marry one wife in one place and then a different one in a different place, because then you're going to end up, the children aren't going to know who each other are, and you may end up with mamzerus. You may end up where the brother is going to meet up with a sister and get married, and all kinds of problems will result from that. However, the Gemara tells, and we learned about it in Yuma as well, that there were a couple of the Chachamim who actually would do that. When they would visit certain places and they were traveling alone, they would ask for a woman to be available in town to marry them for one day. So we learned about it in Yuma in some detail over there. The idea is in order to keep their Yetzirah at bay, and the Gemara says maybe they didn't actually have. So the Gemara gives a couple of possibilities. One is that at least they have passed the Sala. At least they're not necessarily having relations with them, but at least the very fact that they know that they're available helps keep their Yetzirah in check. Anyway, in the course of it, the Gemara mentions the point. Since these are Chachamim, and if they have children, it's going to be well known, so there's less of a concern about that kind of thing, that the children aren't going to know who each other are. But in the course of the discussion, the Gemara also mentions the point, which is this one line over here, that don't you have a problem? Tanya, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Omer, lo yisa odem isha v'dayta l'garsha. A man should not marry a woman having in mind to divorce her. Mishum shenema, al tachrish, al reyach hara, as the pasuk says, don't plot evil against your friend. And reyacha means your wife, also, so who should be your closest friend. And the pasuk continues, "V'hu yoshev lavetach itach." He's living with you peacefully and comfortably, and thinking that all is well. And really, meanwhile, you're plotting something wrong against him. So the Gemara explains in this particular case, they would inform them in advance that it's only for one day. Anyway. So it's not really al tanai. It was more that they're telling them to begin with that you should know this is only a temporary thing while I'm in town. But anyway, the Gemara also brings this point, by the way, about lo yisa adam isha the diet of the kasha. It also brings it at the end of Gittin. There's actually the Rambam also brings it in two places, in Hilchos Yisurei Diyah and in Hilchos Gerushin. And there's a whole sicha in Chelek Lamed Dalet, I think, where the Rebbe analyzes in detail why you need two different places to be said the same thing. And the point is that there's two different dinim in it. One, as far as Parsha doesn't matter of mensh l'chait, don't be marrying a woman and then you have in mind to divorce her. But also, aside from that, it really impinges on the whole concept of marriage to do something like that, which is why the Gemara is bringing up the point over here. And then the Rebbe ends up pointing out the Yena Shel Torah in it. Like this, we to the Eibishter are like a wife to a husband. And after all, the Eibishter knew in advance there was going to be a golos. So isn't that this kind of problem over here, that lo yisa adam isha v'dayta l'garsha? And the answer is there's no actual gerushin between us and the Eibishter. Eiza sefer krisus imchem, as the Navi says, where you think you're divorced from Hashem, where's your get? There's no such thing. The Eibishter has not divorced the Jewish people, chas v'shalom. There's a temporary separation, but so there's no dayta l'garsha in the first place. Was it the Sheva Brachos? I don't know. Further on, the Mishnah says, "Hayivama leitachlitz leitisiabim ad sheyesh l'shloisha chadashim." A yivama should not do chalitza or yibum until 3 months have passed from when her husband passed away. V'chein shal kol anoshim, and the same thing with any other woman who's getting married, and she was previously widowed or divorced. Lo yishausu v'lo yinosu, they shouldn't do erusin or nisuin ad sheyolam shloisha chadashim until 3 months have passed since their husband passed away or divorced them. Oh, Pirshim Gemara. So Gemara explains as far as Yibum, there's a specific concern as far as Yibum. Loitis Yabim Shema Yehav Vlad Ben Shema Yehav Vlad Ben Kayama, because the baby that she, you don't know. It takes 3 months to know whether she's pregnant. So now what happens is the baby she's carrying might be a viable baby. And then it comes out, no Yibum was necessary, and if it wasn't necessary, then it's actually Osir, the Kapoga be'isur eishes ach v'chol. It comes out that her Yavam has married his brother's wife where there's no mitzvah of Yibum, and that's one of the Arayas. So for that reason, she has to wait 3 months. After 3 months, we'll be able to see, is she pregnant? If she's pregnant, then earlier in the parak, it talks about then she shouldn't do chalitza or yibum either until she gives birth, and then we'll see what the story with the baby is. If the baby survives 30 days or more, then that's it. No yibum is necessary. No yibum can be done, and no chalitza is necessary. If the baby is stillborn or dies within 30 days, Rahman al-Tzman, then we say she gets chalitza. Okay, so then Piska, so then the Mishnah says, V'chein shal kol anoshim chola, that the same thing is true of other women as well, when they were previously married So, B'shleima Yevoma k'damoran. So Yevoma, we understand, because you have the problem that otherwise there's going to be an issue of arayis. El shal kol anoshim amai, what's the problem with other women? Why can't they get married within the 3 months? And the reason is, Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Shmuel, Mishum de Amar Kra, we have the pasuk in this week's parasha. Hashem tells Avraham, Lias l'chol elikim ol zaracha acharecha, that I will be to you a God and to your descendants after you. So ol zaracha acharecha means that a yid has to know where he comes from. So therefore, lahavchin bin zarish orishin, lezarish osheni. We want to be able to tell whether this baby is from her first husband or her second one. If not, then he's going to be a yid either way, but he doesn't have that proper yichus, and therefore, so that breaks this thing of lias l'chol adikim. The Gemara, in fact, mentions elsewhere that the shechina rests only on the mishpachas miyuchoses. Only on the families of good yichus among the Jewish people. And good yichus means that people know where they come from and they know that there's no psulim among them. So therefore you need this 3 month break. And the point is also the Gemara establishes, first of all, obviously you'll know whether she's pregnant, but anyway, also you have the difference between the shortest pregnancy can be 6 months and a couple of days, like we find by Moshe Rabbeinu and Shmuel. A typical pregnancy is 9 months. So once you have three months in between, then you'll know if the baby is born in less than 6 months after she gets there, after her second marriage, then you know it's from her first husband. If it's born after that, then you know it's from the second one, and therefore that way there's no confusion. So the Gemara says, Mosiv Rava. So Rava says, then I have a contradiction to that. So if you're telling me the reason is so that we should know who his father is, the Mishnah also says, L'fichach, ger v'giyoras tzrichen l'hamten shloisha chadoshim. that because of this rule, because of this, also a ger and his wife also have to wait 3 months. Meaning you can have a goyish couple that together became geirim. And we're still saying after the geirus, they have to stay apart for 3 months and only then can they resume having relations. What do you mean? Either way, it's her husband. Why? What do we need to tell apart? And the answer is hochanami ika lahavchin. Sure, there is. We need to know. We need to be able to tell. We want to know whether a child is conceived in a state of kedusha after they're Jews versus not in a state of kedusha when they were still goyim. And in fact, if the baby is conceived when they're still goyim, then he's not considered lahalacha related to his father. So for various purposes in halacha, as far as Yerusha and as far as various other purposes, so it's important to know whether he was conceived before or after the Geirus, and again, having that 3 month break helps make that clear. Okay. Further on in the parak, it starts talking about issues involving relations with a shifcha or a goita and the gemara or between an eved and a bas yisrael or a goy and a bas yisrael, and the gemara gets into a discussion about that, whether that makes it, we touched on it earlier in the masechta, whether the child from that is considered a mamzer or whether he's considered a kohen in the case where the father is a goy or an eved or whatever and the mother is Jewish, whether the child is a mamzer or whether he's a yid. The gemara has a whole sugya on the subject. The halacha is that the child is a yid, as we know. And in any case, that in a roundabout way, then that ends up. So eventually it gets to the din of geirus. But first, you have the following story. Hahuda also kamei de Rav. A man came to Rav. Amalahu. He asks Rav a question. Kusi ve'eved abar bas yisrael. If a goy, the word kusi is changed by the censors, it's supposed to be goy or nochri or what have you, or an eved who has relations with a bas yisrael, with a Jewish woman, mahu, what would be the din? What's the status of the child? Amale, so Rav says, avlad kosher. The child is kosher. He's a regular yid. And the Gemara does mention there's a pagam in it. There's a certain nafkaminas as far as intermarrying with koyanim, but basically the child is a kosher yid. Omale, so the guy says, in that case, if I'm in that situation, I'm the son of a goyish father and a Jewish mother. In that case, if you're telling me that such a person is kosher and can marry a Jewish woman, havli brata, then I want to make a shidduch. I want to marry your daughter, Rav. And apparently, Rabbi Yaakov Emden points out, I mean, the guy's not Stam of a fellow off the street. He must have been a Talmud Chacham of some, he must have been a Yid of some caliber that he figures that he's roy for such a thing. But Rav tells him, Lo Yehivnalach, I don't want to marry my daughter off to you. I want my daughter to marry a Miyuchas. Omer Rav Shimi Bachia le Rav. So Rav Shimi Bachia says to Rav, we find elsewhere in the Gemara that this Rav Shimi Bachia was actually Rav's own grandson. Rav, we know, famously had his uncle and Rebbe was Rav Chia, and he had a son of his own who he named Chia after that. And this Rav Shimi Bachia was Rav's grandson. So he says, you know, Amri Inchi, people have an expression, Gamla b'modai akaba rakta. A camel in Modai dances inside a cav. A cav is a small measure. It's a couple of pounds. So it's people have an expression like they say the most tall tales of things that happen far away. So like a person could get away with saying in Modai, in a faraway country, I saw a camel dancing inside a tiny little cav measure. So people will exaggerate and tell tall tales about things that they see far away, and you can't contradict them, because what are you going to go travel all the way to Modai and see it for yourself? Well, Rav Shimi says, ha gamla, v'ha kava, v'ha Modai. Well, here we have all the factors. We have the camel, we have the cav, and we have Modai. V'lo rakden, it's still not dancing. In other words, he's saying to Rav, you're telling us that a person in this situation is able to marry a Bas Yisrael. That's a gevaldike chiddush that here has been discussed all this time and we haven't come to a conclusion. You're saying that it's so. So why don't you want to follow through and actually do it halacha l'maisa and then let him marry your daughter? Again, you know, the guy is mitzad asking. You know, it's not his own qualities, his roy for it. The Aruch HaNer, by the way, has a cute explanation why Rav Shimi Ba'ashi uses this, Rav Shimi Bachia uses this particular metaphor for it. He said, well, first of all, Ben Yehoyada says actually a camel, we know, is one of the animals that has only one simen tara. So therefore, Ben Yehoyada says the camel over here can represent this guy who has, in a certain sense, only one simen tara. His mother is Jewish, his father is a goy. But anyway, the Aruch HaNer says like this. If you see that if you see somebody actually doing that, making a camel do a trick like that, there must be one of two reasons. Either he's doing it for money, or he's doing it to show off his chokhmah, how well he's able to train the animal. Well, there's a pasuk that implies that Madai was a very rich country. So in Madai, they wouldn't be doing it for money. They would be doing it for chokhmah. So Rav Shimi is saying to Rav, you've shown your chokhmah by saying this din. Why don't you now show it l'maisa, and allow him to do it. Omalei. So Rav answers back, I don't care. Inahavi ki Yeshua bin Nun. Even if this guy was of the caliber of Yeshua bin Nun, lo yehivnele brati. I still wouldn't let him marry my daughter. What does he mean? Why does he mention Davka Yeshua bin Nun? So there's a couple of interesting things on this. There's a halacha in Shulchan Aruch in Hilchos Talmud Torah that says if a person says to somebody else, even if you were like Moshe Rabbeinu, I wouldn't pay attention to you. Then it says in Shulchan Aruch this person should be given malchus. There's a bizoyan. What's the bizoyan? You could say the bizoyan is that he's implying he wouldn't listen to Moshe Rabbeinu. The Taz actually explains that another way of understanding is the bizoyan could be that he's implying that somebody else could possibly be like Moshe Rabbeinu when we know like Kom Novi Obi Yisrael Kamoshe. So Rav is choosing to mention Yeshua over here to avoid that. As great as Yeshua was, he was Moshe's Talmud, he's still not of the caliber of Moshe, and therefore to say, if he was like Yeshua, is not a slur of the kind, is not a bizoyan of the kind that it would be if he'd said like Moshe Rabbeinu. Rav Levitt, the Rebbe's father, has a different take on an Alpi Kabbalah. He explains that Rav represents Malchus of Atzilus. Yeshua ben Nun represents Malchus of Bria. Atzilus is infinitely higher than Bria, so therefore, Rav is saying even if the guy is like Yeshua, Malchus de Bria, nevertheless I'm on a higher level, Malchus Atzilus, he doesn't belong with me. Omalei, sort of Shimi answers back, yeah, but the difference is, I have a ki Yeshua ben Nun, you know, if the guy at least was like Yeshua ben Nun, I mar lo yoivle, at least if you, Rebbe, didn't want to marry off your daughter to him, achrini yavile, at least other people would be willing to. Hi, but this poor fellow, if you don't marry off your daughter to him, other people aren't going to want to make a shidduch with him either. So in other words, Pashat have rachmanis on the guy. So the guy was still staying over there and then badgering and nudging Rav about it. So Rav gave him a look and the guy passed away. Well, shochiv means he passed away. But now, why does that mean? Okay, the guy was a nudnik, but why did he deserve such a harsh punishment? Ben Yehoyada says it's like this. This point about the status of such a child has been a major debate among the Amoraim. The Gemara has had a whole sugya on the subject with different opinions. Rav is just paskin that have lab kosher. Now, we want that to be accepted. We want that psak to be widely accepted. However, Rav, the fact is, Rav is saying, as far as my own daughter, I want her to marry a miyuchas. If it becomes known that Rav has refused to give his daughter in marriage to this guy, people are going to say, you know what, maybe Rav himself is not certain of the din. Maybe the guy is a suffolk after all. Therefore, there's no choice but to have the guy removed from the scene so that way people will know the halacha is a definite one and then people are not going to be talking about, yeah, but Rav didn't want his daughter to marry this guy. It's still harsh, but yeah. The moral of the story is, I guess, don't be too much of a nudnik. I don't know.
From a shrine.
Yeah. And that's killed him, isn't it? So, Rossin by Aid, if he gave this person his eyes, sees through the Tadic side, they've already seen Atmos. Interesting. Tosfos, by the way, points out in some places that the expression Gal Shal Atmos is used when the guy is a no good nick. And that when the guy is a decent fellow, then instead the word is shochiv or noch nafshe. So that also supports what Rabbi Yaakov Emden is saying over here, that the guy is for a tamen chacham, he has good qualities and all, he's not stam and nunnik off the street. So there. The Gemara continues, v'af Rav Masna moda ba lehetera. Rav Masna also paskin lehetera as a mat that is mutter for such a person to marry a bas Yisrael, that he is considered a full yid, and he's not considered a mamzer. V'ach Rav Yehuda Mor Bala Teira. And we also find that Rav Yehuda also paskin that such a person is mutter to marry a Bas Yisrael. As we have an example, the Kiosel Kameid Rav Yehuda, there was one time a person like that who came to Rav Yehuda, or maybe there was more than one, Omalei, and Rav Yehuda told him, you have, if you stay over here, people know, everybody around here knows that you're, where you come from, that your father was a Goy and your mother was a Jew, and they're not going to want to make Shaduchim with you. What you should do is Zil Itmar, go hide yourself, which means go move someplace where nobody knows you, and then you'll be able to marry a Bas Yisrael, because then nobody knows that your father's a Goy, and then no, people will have no problem making Shaduchim with you. Oy Nesiv Bas Minach, or marry a woman of your own kind, also a woman who's whose father was a Goy or an Eved or whatever, whose mother was a Yid, because again, her Yichus not being so great either, she'd be willing to make a Shidduch with you. As opposed to, in other words, the point is, don't marry a Mamzeres or a Shifcha, because you yourself are a full Yid, and you're not allowed to marry, and you're not allowed to marry such women. The point is that Rabbi Yehuda is saying it's mutter for him to marry a Bas Yisrael. If you can find a way to hide the fact where you come from, gezuntahek, go marry a full Bas Yisrael. And the same thing, the Chiyosel came to Rava, and when a person came to Rava with the same question also, he said, Amalei oi goli oi nosev bas minach, same thing, either go in Golos to a place where people don't know you, or marry a woman of your own kind.
If she's Jewish.
The suffix is whether this man is Jewish. His mother was Jewish. His father was a Goy. The Gemara has a very detailed sugya over here discussing the question whether such a child is a mamzer or whether he's a kosher yid. At the end, in the fact, earlier in this mesechta, at the end of the first parak, the Gemara had mentioned opinions that such children are considered mamzerim. Therefore, the Gemara had mentioned Ein Makablam Gerim in a Talmudim. That according to some opinions, there's a place called Talmud where Avdei Shloima lived and intermarried with Jewish women, and their children, according to that mandama, would be considered mamzerim. So now the Gemara is stressing the point that nevertheless we see that Rav and Rav Masna and Rav Yehuda and Rava all held la halacha that such a child is considered a kosher yid, and therefore he's also to marry a mamzeres. That's the halacha, yeah. There is actually a very interesting explanation. There is a very interesting shita from the Maharit, which I think I've mentioned in this shiur before, from the Maharit Al-Ghazi, a prominent Akron, who he learns that actually such a case, it really depends how the child was raised. He says if the child is raised as a Yid, he's raised by his Jewish mother, and he's raised as a Yid, then he's a Yid. If he's raised by his Goyish father, then he would be considered a Goy, holds the Maharit Al-Ghazi. He uses that to explain how it is that Daryovish, who on the face of it is the child of Esther and Achashverosh, how is he considered a Goy if Esther is his mother and she's Jewish? So he uses it to explain that, and he uses it to explain various other things as well. The halacha is not like that, but it's still an interesting shita for all that. So now, by way of this, having talked about this concept of a child of a mixed marriage like that, so that eventually leads the Gemara in a roundabout way into the dinim of Gerus. This sugya over here, we're going to have only the Agadta of it, of course, but this sugya is the major place in Shas where you have the dinim of Gerus. So the Gemara says, Tanan Rabbanan, Ger Shemol V'lo Tovol, if a Ger has a bris milah, but he doesn't tovel in the mikveh, Rabbi Eliezer Omer Harei is a Ger. Rabbi Eliezer says that's good enough and he's still considered a Ger. Shekein Matzinu V'Avesenu Shemol V'lo Tovol, because we find that our ancestors, before they left Mitzrayim, they had a bris milah, but we don't find that they toveled then when they left Mitzrayim. So therefore he holds, you should do both, but he holds that one of them by itself is good enough. Avicenna means our ancestors when they left Mitzrayim. It doesn't mean Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. It means our ancestors, the 600,000 Jewish men who left Mitzrayim. All Jews became Geirim by Matan Torah. The Gemara explains, we learn the concept. What does a Ger have to do? We learn, since the Pasuk says, Kochem Kager, a Ger is just like you, that means the same process that the Jewish people had to go through before Matan Torah is the same process that a Ger has to go through in all times. We had to accept the mitzvahs, a Ger has to accept the mitzvahs. We had Mila, a Ger needs Mila. We had Tevila, as Rabbi Yeshua is going to point out now, so a Ger needs Tevila. They had a Korban brought, Moshe Rabbeinu had the Bechorim bring Korbanos, and Parsha at the end of Parsha's Mishpatim, a Ger needs to bring a Korban.
Should we? Hashem chose Ak, who chose Ak, but the Ger chose the Jew.
That's also true, but yeah. The point is that the procedure is similar. So the Braisa continues, Rabbi Yeshua Imahareza Ger, at top of Leimol, if he toibles but doesn't have a bris mila, Rabbi Yeshua Imahareza Ger, Rabbi Yeshua says that also will be good enough for him to be a Ger, Shekin Masina be Imo, it's Shetob Lov Leimolu, because after all, the women who left Mitzrayim, they didn't have a bris mila, but they toibled, and that was good enough. Wait, I know you're wondering, of course, it's impossible for them to have a bris mila, hold that thought a second. V'cham oimim, the Cham say no, you don't need nothing of the sort, tovo v'leimol, mol v'leitovo, and a gerat sh'yomo v'yitbo, you need both. So the Gemara asks, Rabbi Yeshua nami neilach me'ovos, so why doesn't Rabbi Yeshua learn from the fathers, from the men who left Mitzrayim, and say therefore that bris mila is an absolute necessity, Rabbi Eliezer nami neilach me'imoz, and after all, according to Rabbi Eliezer, there were women who left Mitzrayim and they didn't have a mila, v'chitema, so the Gemara goes into a whole sugya about it, and the Gemara explains, basically like this. Yes, of course a woman can't have a bris mila physically, because the relevant part doesn't exist. But the question is, it's called donin efsher mishi'i efsher or not. Yes, it's physically impossible for a woman to have a bris mila. Nevertheless, can we say that that's a good enough, precedent to say that you see that it's possible to have gerus without mila? So Rabbi Yeshua holds yes, and Rabbi Eliezer holds that not. And the Gemara explains actually that Rabbi Eliezer would agree that tevila is a part of it because they did tovah before Matan Torah, but he's saying that the essential thing really is the mila. And the Chacham say nothing of the above. You absolutely need both of them, just like the Jewish people had by Matan Torah, and that's the halacha. So the Gemara continues, Tanan Rabbanan, Misha Bava Omer Gerani. If a person comes and says, I am a Ger, and we're talking about, Rishonim explained, Tosfos, the Rambam, explained, we're talking about that we knew before that this guy was a Gori. Now, if we had no idea who the guy was, a guy shows up one day and says, I'm a Yid, and then it says, I'm a Ger, then we have a concept called a Pesha also, a Pesha Hitir. Which means we wouldn't have known otherwise that he was ever a goy. He's coming and telling us, and he's also telling us that he's a ger. Therefore, we can believe him. But here we're talking about, we used to know this guy, and we knew he was a goy. Now, all of a sudden, one day, he shows up and says that I'm a ger. Yochol nekablenu, you would think that we should accept him and take him at his word, that he is a valid ger. No. Talmud lema itcha. Therefore, the pasuk says, when a ger is with you. That means, that means, you have to have a chazaka, you have to know for a fact that he is a ger. What about if he comes with Edim? How do we know that he's a ger? How do we know that then he's believed? Tamad Lima, therefore, the pasuk says, v'chiyogu itcha ger ba'aretzachem, if a ger lives among you in your country, so that means the chiyogu, no matter what, as long as he's there, as long as he's a ger. The Gemara actually asks, it's not here in any act of what's the chiddush. Of course, if he has edim, then we believe him. And the Gemara explains, it means the edim are not saying we were present when he became a ger. It means they're saying we know, like by hearsay or whatever from the Beis Din, that he's a ger. So that's good enough evidence. Continues the Gemara, Ainli ela ba'aretz. Now you would only know that the concept of gerus applies in Eretz Yisrael, b'chutz la'aretz minayin. How would we know that it applies, that it's possible for a person to become a ger in chutz la'aretz as well? Tosfos points out, why would we even think that it should be limited to Eretz Yisrael? Two reasons. First of all, because the fact is, the Pasuk says, Ba'artzachem, so therefore you would think, even though, now we, the usual rule is that only mitzvahs at Tluyas Ba'aretz, only mitzvahs that have to do with the land, with the soil of Eretz Yisrael, apply only in Eretz Yisrael. Truma, Maiser, Shmita, etc. Here, this is a chovas aguf. This is not something that has to do with the soil. Nonetheless, since it says ba'aretzachem, you might have thought it's limited to Eretz Yisrael. Another point Tosfos says is you might think Eretz Yisrael is a zovas chol avodvash. So therefore, a guy in Eretz Yisrael, you would think therefore, he has more of a motivation to become a ger. But in Chutz La'aretz, we have to be more concerned. Even if he becomes a ger, he may afterwards change his mind. And you say, you know what, why did I bother? I'm not getting anything out of it anyway. I may as well go back to being a goy. And that would be a serious problem. So therefore, we need to be told that we can accept gerim in Chutz La'aretz as well and not be concerned about that. So b'chutz la'aretz minayin, tamad lama itcha, again, because the pasuk says itcha, which means b'chol makom she itcha, wherever you yidin are, then you can have gerim. in Kain Matam Lema Ba'aretz, well, then why does the Pasuk say Ba'aretz Echem in the first place? Means Ba'aretz Tzorech Lahavi Raya. Because even if it's in Eretz Yisrael, again, you do have the concern that Fakert, he may have to begin with become a ger in order to enjoy the bounty of Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, he needs to bring a proof that in fact he was properly misgayer by a based in Kalocha. Rabbi Yehuda says, on the other hand, outside Eretz Yisrael, he doesn't need to bring a raya because it's not very likely that he joined the Jewish people in order to gain any benefits from it. Because what benefits do Jews have from what benefit do we have from being Jews in Chutz La'aretz? The Chum say either way he has to bring a raya. In Shulchan Aruch it talks about, so it depends actually. When it comes to this that we're saying he has to bring a raya, is primarily, first of all, again, only if we knew for a fact that before he was a guy, and also, and it's more as far as matters of yuchsin, as far as whether he can marry a Jewish woman for certain other purposes, we can say that a yid comes to shul and says, I'm a yid or I'm a ger, then to a certain extent we can take him at his word. Nowadays, when you have fraudulent conversions, a whole other matter, but yeah. So the Gemara goes on, the Pasuk says, and Moshe Rabbeinu tells the Dayanim that he's appointing, you should judge righteously between a person and between one person and his brother and between his ger. Now, why mention the ger in that context? Mikana Rabbi Yehuda, ger shenis gayer bebeis din hareis a ger. Only if a person has become a ger by was converted by a beis din, then he's a valid ger. Bein or the bein asma in a ger, but if he does it on his own or not with a beis din, then he's not a valid ger. He had mila, he had tevila, he accepted the mitzvahs, the whole nine yards, but there's no beis din, so therefore no good. And in fact, ma'aseh be'echad shabal lifnei Rabbi Yehuda, a person once came to Rabbi Yehuda, va'omalei, he says, nisgayarti the beini the bein asmi. I became a ger by myself. I didn't have a beis din involved. Omalei. So Rabbi Yehuda asks him, "Yesh lecha edim? Do you have edim? At least the edim might be able to say that in fact the beis din was involved, and if they say so, then obviously that overrides what you're saying." Amalei lav, no. Yesh lecha bonim? The Rabbi Yehuda asks the guy, "Do you have any children?" Amalei hein, yes. Amalei, so Rabbi Yehuda tells him, "Neman ata lipsalas atzmacha. You can be trusted to pass for yourself. You're saying that you were." You're saying that you were nisgayer bein lebein asmacha, which means that you're posel. You're not actually a ger. So you can posel yourself because of what they call hadas baldin kamei edim nam. The iat nema lifsel aspanecha, but we're not going to trust you as far as posseling your children because you don't have the ability to say edus on them because you're only one person. You don't have the ability to say edus that's going to passel your children. So therefore, your children would still be considered legitimate Jews as far as you. If you want to be a yid, we're gonna have to know that a beis din did it.
Relationship between him and his children, he's a ger.
Well, if he's a ger, then he doesn't have a biological relationship between them, but not a halachic relationship. It's true, but nevertheless, though, he's only one person, and he doesn't have the ability to say an edus that would passel them. So yeah, it does seem self-contradictory because if he's not a yid, then yeah. But nonetheless, that's how it is. We have sometimes in halacha where that's how it is. We believe one part of an edus and not a different part. There it's more because he's one person. But there was something about it actually in Daf Yomi just the other day, for example, that a man comes to Beis Din together with somebody else and says that Pliny was mizana with my wife. So we'll believe him insofar as the other guy is going to be chayav misa, but not as far as his own wife because he's related to her and he can't give edus about her. So we see that it's called palginin dibura. We have a concept where we can split up what a person says, and la halacha we can believe one part of it and then disregard a different part of it. So here Rabbi Yehuda is saying it's a similar kind of thing. All right. So we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, with more of these dinim, and God just about gave us.
Sunday.
Tomorrow. Oh, you're right. Sunday. Yeah. Yeah. You're right. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Ogrola Vav Cheshvan. So the Rambam brings an Igeret of Teman, the whole famous letter that the Rambam wrote to the Jews of Teman, who were beset with a whole bunch of different problems, and he writes a letter to them to be mechazik their emuna in the Eibishter and in Mashiach and so forth. He mentions in there that there's going to come a point when Tachzor Nevuah Yisrael, when Nevuah is going to be restored to the Jewish people as a prerequisite, as a preface to Mashiach coming. The actual date that the Rambam gives there turned out to be about 11 years after he himself was nostalgic. That Rebbe mentions in a sikh or a letter, I don't remember which, that around that time you had a number of great Rishonim who had a level of Ruach HaKodesh pretty close to, if not actually the level of Nevuah, such as Rabbi Yehuda HaChosid and others, and therefore in that sense that prediction of the Rambam's was fulfilled at that time. Anyway, the Nevuah primarily is going to be Mashiach Tzidkenu. The Rambam himself writes in Hilchos Teshuvah that Mashiach is going to be a Navi on almost of the caliber of Moshe Rabbeinu, as we learned here in the Gemara. Nobody can be quite of the caliber of Moshe, but you can be pretty close. Now, Medrash Tanchuma, actually, from the Medrash Tanchuma is Mashma, that Mashiach will be a greater Navi than Moshe. So there's a Sicha where the Rebbe addresses that point, but the Rebbe points out, it still needs to be analyzed what exactly is the level of the Nevuah of Mashiach.
Find out.
When he comes, we'll find out, yeah. Okay. Continuing with halachas of washing and bathing on Shabbos. Now you have certain kind of water that people will only bathe in it for medicinal purposes. So an example from the times of the Gemara is, for example, water that smells bad or something. Nobody would bathe in it to get themselves clean. You bathe in it because the minerals or whatever are good for your skin or whatever. So you're not allowed to bathe in such water on Shabbos, because it's clear that it's for refuah, and in general, the Chachamim ban many kinds of refuahs on Shabbos, because you have it's called Shema Yishchik Savamonin. The Chachamim are concerned that you may grind up spices to use, herbs to use for medicines. So there's details about it. We're going to get to, eventually we'll get to the dinim of medicines and healing and whatever on Shabbos, says Hashem, in a few simonim, but this is all when he stays in them for a while. If he doesn't stay in them, then it just looks like he's just trying to cool off, so therefore that would be fine. A person is allowed to go in water on Shabbos just to cool off. Now, when it comes to, for example, the hot springs of Tveria or other kinds of hot springs like that, same kind of thing. If they're used only for refuah, then you're not allowed to use them for refuah, even if you're not staying in them, because those are ones that we're normally, again, you only go in them for refuah to begin. So among the hot springs, and you have, for example, a bunch of ones around the United States as well, same idea. In other words, it depends. Is this something where people just go there in order to relax and refresh themselves, or is it one? Is it one of those kinds full of sulfur or whatever, which is specifically people use it for refuah? Then that would be an issue on Shabbos, aside from what he talked about earlier in the Simen, where you have when it's inside a building and when there's schwitzing involved and so forth, where you have other dinim involved with that on Shabbos.
Vitamins,
so we'll get to that in Siman Tzedek Aleph, Chesed Hashem. The basic general rule is anything that healthy people eat, you're allowed to eat on Shabbos, even if you have it in mind for medicinal purposes. Anything that healthy people don't normally eat is generally also on Shabbos, unless a person is a Chol Hashem V'Sakana or what have you. But so vitamins, I mean, people do commonly take them even when they're healthy, so it might be, but I don't know, and I guess when we get closer, when we get to there, Chesed Hashem, we'll talk about it.